don't you know?
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they're saying,
"Hood,
ah,
hood,
ah,
hood,
ah,
hood,
ah."
Well, don't you know?
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang.
Well, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. There's no cause I'd rather struggle for, and it is a struggle, but it is a glorious fight, and it's an honor to be engaged in it. Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of TPC as we kick off our march around the world this Saturday evening, March the 6th. And Adrian Davis already emailed me to say what a good time he had. We had a great time with him, and we could have gone the whole show with him. What a fount of knowledge and information and insight, and that's the kind of guests we're going to be featuring all throughout this month. But what we're going to be doing this hour, yours truly, James Edwards and Keith Alexander, we're going to be breaking down the news, so let's just get right to it. Dr. Seuss was canceled this week. And the left is really eating its own with Dr. Seuss, Keith, otherwise known as Theodore Geisel, who was virulently anti-white. Before he was famous, if people don't know,
and anti-Southern,
he drew over 400 political cartoons for a left-wing newspaper in New York that undermined and attacked whites both in America and abroad. And so the left has become so unhinged with this cancel culture and so absurd that they forget that Dr. Seuss actually hated white people just as much as they did. And they do.
And in particular, Southern white people.
He was ahead of his time, too, Keith, in comparing dissidents who wanted to question the system narrative to Nazis. Basically, anyone who didn't want to make the world safe for communism was a Nazi. And some Seuss drawings you might not be familiar with, we posted to our Twitter account this week. So just to give you, I'll verbally paint the picture here. So here's a cartoon, Dr. Seuss. It's got a bunch of white people in line, and they're getting sprayed through the ear with a mental insecticide. And the headline reads, "What this country needs is a good mental insecticide." And it's got Uncle Sam spraying white people in the ear with this poison, and out pops the racial prejudice bug. So there was Dr. Seuss out of the other ear. There was Dr. Seuss saying we need to have our minds poisoned way before it was fashionable. Here you have
brainwashing.
The guy who makes a mockery of democracy, and it has someone waving an American flag while they're holding the black man down in the cellar. And here is one where he compares anyone who was part of Lindbergh's America First movement as a Siamese twin with a Nazi in a circus sideshow. So that's that was Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss, you know, there's a question as to what his ethnic origin is, but let me tell you, the positions he took were all the positions of Jewish power and influence back in the day, like the anti-Lindbergh position, for example.
Well, and I think it's interesting that he got canceled. But that's not why we're bringing this up. Look, I read Green Eggs and Ham and Cat in the Hat. I mean, I could have taken it or left it, but you know, we all read that.
Stole Christmas.
We all read that stuff as kids. But the hatred of Dr. Seuss is so amusing, considering how liberal progressive he was on all metrics. Out of 9 out of 10 cases, mainstream conservatives take the wrong position, and in this case, hysterically defend liberal dips like Theodore Geisel, a.k.a. Dr. Seuss. So we had Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson, on his show, spent primetime real estate defending Dr. Seuss. And he was saying, well, in his Sneetches story, Dr. Seuss is just showing that, hey, we're all the same on the inside. Color doesn't matter. You know, so this is Tucker has internalized this liberal message that we're all the same except for the color of our skin. And that is, you know, a problem I had with Rush Limbaugh and Tucker. come on, this is conservatism. This is, and I like Tucker on a lot of things. I like Rush on a lot of things, but they'll only take you so far. Anybody that's going to defend Dr. Seuss and his anti-white message, defending him from cancel culture, that's what conservatives do. Isn't it so cliche, Keith? I mean, there is conservatism defending the heroes and the advancements of the left as our dear, beloved Stonewall Jackson's emissary, R.L. Dabney, once put it.
Well, look, this is where Tucker Carlson joins hands with CPAC conservatives, unfortunately. He may not have researched the thing enough. He may have shot from the hip. But,
well, if we can do it with our budget, I think he can do it with his.
Well, Sean Hannity, you know, did the same thing. But what we need to remember is this all could be just an elaborate ploy by the left and by the Dr. Seuss publishing company, because the ones that they the books of his that they decided to blacklist are the worst selling titles in his entire Dr. Seuss library. So basically, they're willing to throw that under so that they can, little Jack Horner sticking their thumb and pull out a plum and say to all the left, what good boys we are. We got rid of the bad stuff in Dr. Seuss, so please buy a lot of Dr. Seuss books. And guess what? That's exactly what has been the result
of
all this.
I don't know if they were thinking that far, if they were playing the long game, as you're putting it. But I will tell you, the point of Dr. Seuss getting canceled, look, there's a lot of people getting canceled, and Dr. Seuss isn't on my mind, and I'm not concerned with that. He was a bad guy.
And quite frankly,
he was against us.
He could entirely be canceled, and I wouldn't shed any tears.
But the reason I'm bringing this up is I lose my patience with people like Tucker and previously with Rush. Well, Sean Hannity, of course. We're doing the heavy lifting. Shows like ours, TBC, we're doing the heavy lifting. They're getting rich. How about a little help, fellas? Why are they not featuring people? Adrian Davis is a world-class guest for any broadcast. That, you know, I started this show 16 years ago to bring people like Adrian to a wider audience, because his message would have never been heard by an audience on radio if it weren't for this program. That's what sets us apart. But why isn't Tucker having on people like Adrian instead of defending people like Adrian and other people who are truly being canceled, like Mark Collett in the UK, like us and so many others? No, he's defending Dr. Seuss. Yes, yes, Tucker is the best that's on TV. I agree with 80, 85, 90% of what Tucker says. I think we agree with most of it. But this stuff, I can get this stuff, the defending of Dr. Seuss from Rachel Maddow. And I've been attacked by her, too. We've been attacked by everyone. I can't even remember them all anymore. But this is conservatism personified.
Dr. Seuss, first of all, is dead. Why defend him? And secondly, even if he were alive, he is part of the enemy camp. So why is a supposed conservative, spokesman like Tucker Carlson wasting his time and energy on Dr. Seuss? What he should be saying is good riddance to bad rubbish.
Gotcha. My Madam Producer is coming in my ear, and they're always keeping us straight, and we love them for it. And I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for that. All right, so that I guess that's some good news in a way that Dr. Seuss was canceled. But here's some other good news. Golden Globes, Keith, Golden Globes, let's quickly work this in. Golden Globes, they went down from 18 million viewers last year to 6 million. That is a catastrophic decline in viewership.
Well, that is a glorious decline from our standpoint.
That's good.
And
I hope
the Golden Globes go totally out of business.
When we come back, we are going to talk a little bit more about what's going on across the South and indeed in other places here in the United States, at least, with regards to COVID restrictions and mask mandates. Stay tuned. A lot more to come this hour before we go to Australia as our march around the world continues in the third hour.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
I guess one thing we could very quickly make mention of was Trump's speech at CPAC. So when we were on the air last week, last Saturday, Trump had not yet spoken at CPAC. He spoke on Sunday afternoon, so that would have been the next day, obviously. Pretty good speech. He spent a lot of time talking about how he won the election against Biden. Pretty good on immigration. It was a throwback speech in some ways to candidate Trump. But we put a little poll up on TPC's Twitter account. Now, this would obviously be in some ways representative of Trump's wider base. And Ron DeSantis came in second place in the CPAC straw poll. Trump won it. DeSantis came in second. And Kristi Noem was in third, but with only 4%. So the only two people to get double digits or higher were Trump and DeSantis. And so I put a little Twitter poll up, and I asked the TPC audience, our followers there at James Edwards TPC, would you vote for Trump DeSantis in 2024? Only 60.1% said yes. 39.9% said no. Maybe, I guess, indicative of we won't be fooled again in a way. But I thought it was interesting that only 60% of the TPC audience said they would vote for Trump if he ran again in 2024.
Well,
even after a pretty good CPAC speech.
Well, look, our people know well what Trump's shortcomings were. And his shortcomings are, you know, really outweigh his pluses. The best thing that he did was open up a dialogue and made topics current and debatable that had before been swept under the rug. That's about the best thing we can say. But on the other hand, he's probably as valuable, if not more valuable, to us now that he's out of office.
I said yes,
now.
Yes, I said that, Keith. I said that, and I think whites are beginning to coalesce. You know, we had a poll that we've been talking about for a couple of weeks that certainly suggests that they're beginning to come together and form a group identity that didn't exist even during the Trump years.
Well, see, if Trump had been elected again, he would have thought that he had done no wrong. He would think it was an endorsement of everything that he had done, and he wouldn't be able to sit back and listen to what the masses are saying, the masses of Trump supporters. And the masses of Trump supporters, I think, had a different viewpoint than he did on a lot of issues. And hopefully he will learn more, and he'll also learn that there's no pacifying the other side. It doesn't matter how you try to reach out to them, they're going to bite your hand.
Well, and it's the age-old question, is our salvation going to come, political salvation, obviously not our eternal salvation, which can only come through Jesus Christ, but will our political salvation come through an existing party, or is that insanity, continuing to vote for the lesser of two evils of the Republican Party? But the Republican Party is being remade in Trump's image, and in Trump's image, a lot of our people are there. But we'll move on from that. Keith, very quickly on this. I want 30 seconds or less. I saw this headline, and there's not – I mean, just reading it pretty much tells the whole story. No need for a lot of commentary, because I do want to talk about COVID this segment. But in Baltimore, a high school student who passed three total classes in 4 years of his high school years was at the top of his class with a 0.13 GPA.
Look, you know, you can't make this stuff up. This is what has happened to
public progress,
education.
That's progress, buddy. Hasn't public education progressed since the 50s and 60s, separate but equal?
The wonderful tonic effect that Brown versus Board of Education had on public education in America. There it is.
0% GPA.
I mean, at least back then, black kids that were going to all-black segregated schools came out of high school not only learning the English language and syntax and grammar and things like that, they actually could do algebra. You know,
a zero GPA, top of his class.
I mean, he doesn't even bother to show up because he knows it's futile. But on the other hand, he's probably going to
and
get
there's
going
to be an affirmative action job out there waiting for him.
Well, not only that, there's going to be an affirmative action college where he's probably going to Harvard or Yale.
Hey, by the way,
he's a valedictorian.
We were
remember?
Talking about talking about smart people. Truly smart people. Adrian Davis, that education, Cambridge, the Sorbonne. You know, Andrew Fraser, who's going to be with us from Australia here at the top of the next hour, he went to Harvard.
We won't hold that against him.
Well, so did Virginia Abernathy. You know, so there's at least two people from Harvard that are still alive.
Jared Taylor went to Yale.
That's right. Anyway, okay, well, let's get to this. The headline reads, Capitol Police officials say intel on possible March 4th plot being taken seriously. This was, of course, something a couple of days ago that never happened, was never going to happen. We knew it, and they knew it. It's a big pretend, so unserious, so comical. If it weren't so, if it wasn't anything else but the United States government, the Capitol Police officials said on Wednesday that they have obtained intelligence that shows a possible plot to breach the Capitol by an identified militia group on Thursday, March 4th. What a joke. Once again, we have the so-called intelligence community peddling completely fabricated misinformation. Yet again, no logically thinking person ever believed that 50,000 3%ers were going to sack Washington this week. Where were they planning this? 50,000 people, that's a lot to organize.
This is the intelligence community.
No one, Keith, had heard of outside of whatever group they're organizing it with, even less info spread than the non-existent gun protest. They had protesters. The anti-white narrative tail is wagging the dog 24/7. 50,000 3%ers, they don't even exist, much less that many are going to come and sack Washington. But they had hearings. All the alphabet soup intelligent or so-called intelligent organizations were seriously contemplating the threat and preparing for it. That's why Washington, D.C. looks like the no-go zone in Baghdad.
Well, we're going to start calling them the lack of intelligence organizations rather than the intelligence organizations. I mean, this is Orwellian intelligence. In other words, this is like the Ministry of Truth, the ministry which was actually the Ministry of Untruth. The intelligence, if this is what we're paying princely sums to people for in the FBI and other organizations like that, then basically we just need to clean house. If Trump or anyone else like him gets in, just start handing out the pink slips and just get some law enforcement people from Red State America in there to transform the FBI and all the rest of that alphabet soup group of intelligence agencies back into what they were intended to be originally, which was law enforcement agencies.
Very quickly on COVID, long overdue, as we mentioned, but as usual, the South is right. Texas and Mississippi lifted the COVID-19 mask mandates. Businesses can return to 100% capacity. And since the South once again showed the way, we have had a falling of the dominoes. Alabama now going to be doing that in April. They're going to lift their mandates and restrictions on April 9th. Let's see here. Lots of states.
The emperor has no clothes. Well, that's the point where we're at this point.
Massachusetts
is time to be the little boy that says the emperor has no clothes.
Texas and Mississippi showed the way. Now even Massachusetts is allowing restaurants to operate in Arizona after the Texas and Mississippi took the lead. Arizona are allowing businesses to reopen at 100% capacity. West Virginia Governor Jim Justice announces that bars, restaurants, small businesses, retail stores, gyms, and museums can now open to 100% capacity. So it's amazing how many other states so quickly decided to stop pretending, Keith, as you mentioned, once Texas and Mississippi pointed out that the emperor had no clothes. And that's exactly what I said. Sam Dixon, I asked Sam Dixon about this. I was talking to Sam a few weeks ago on the phone, and we were talking about the different states and the different cities and counties and the various restrictions. I said, Sam, I'm missing something obvious here. I said, why is it that conservative areas, for lack of a better adjective, are lax on the COVID restrictions, but the liberal areas are so stringent? And he said, it's a good question, and I've got the answer. And he said, it comes down, it's as simple as this. Conservatives naturally question what the media and the government and the authorities say and think for themselves, whereas liberals are entirely beholden to authority and to the state.
As long as the liberals are in charge, of course, you never saw a more skeptical group in the world than the liberal media when Donald Trump was in charge.
Well, okay, I guess that's
supposedly in charge.
Well, anyway, but I think at the end of the day, the mindset is there. Liberals are obedient, whereas conservatives are always rebellious.
And also, liberals, since the Civil War and beyond that, always like trying to bend conservatives to their will. That is their greatest delight in the world.
Beat sex about
10 to 1.
Okay. Looks like COVID is going the way of the dodo, and not a moment too soon, and in fact, entirely too late. We'll be right back.
Your daily Liberty News Wire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The Senate has passed President Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief plan. The bill passed along party lines Saturday morning by a 50-49 vote. Before the final vote, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell criticized the Democrats for rushing through a bill without any GOP support. He said the previous five stimulus bills were written with bipartisan support, but he accused Democrats of taking advantage of a crisis for this measure.
Five rescue packages totaling $4 trillion, and none of them got fewer than 90 votes. The Senate wrote the CARES Act, Republicans and Democrats shoulder to shoulder. That was the road to real pandemic relief, but Democrats actually wanted, Mr. President, something else. They explained their intent very clearly, to exploit this crisis, quote, as a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision.
This is USA Radio News.
Rockstar Radio. Did you know this station, this network, is looking for their next rockstar broadcaster? That's right, we are. And it could be you. It could be you interviewing the guests, talking to the newsmakers right in the middle of everything. Have you ever dreamed of being a rockstar show host? Now could be your chance. Together with this station, we'll help you with everything you need. The studios, the equipment, your own producer, a co-host if you'd like, and so much more. Broadcasting is changing. There's never been a need for fresh voices and unique opinions like there is right now. You can do this. Our professional team will guide you every step of the way. Sound effects, show content, building your social network media, and everything you need to be the next rockstar broadcaster. Get all the details. Email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. To get started with your own show, email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. Don't wait. You could be the next voice for America. Email Bill at rockstar.today.
A member of the UK's royal family remains hospitalized after a recent surgery. Wendy King has the story from the USA Radio News Pacific Northwest Bureau.
Britain's Prince Philip is recovering after undergoing a medical procedure for a heart condition at a London hospital, where he's been for more than 2 weeks, according to Buckingham Palace. Officials said doctors performed the unspecified surgical procedure on him after he'd spent several days in the hospital for what was described as a precautionary measure. Prince Philip, who turns 100 in June, was originally taken to King Edward VII's hospital in London and was later transferred to a hospital which specializes in cardiac care. Prince Philip and the Queen have been living at Windsor Castle instead of Buckingham Palace due to the COVID-19 pandemic. From the USA Radio News Pacific Northwest Bureau, I'm Wendy King.
In a statement, Buckingham Palace said Prince Philip will remain in hospital for several more days for rest and recuperation. This is USA Radio News.
Oh yeah, oh, wanna be by my side. Oh yeah, oh, now it's finally time.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
You know, going back to talking about the misinformation agencies, the FBI, they came out this week and told us they can't tell us what caused the cop's death during the so-called insurrection on January the 6th, Brian Sicknick. They can't tell us what caused. That's now, your FBI.
Also known as Mr. Potato Head.
Your FBI in action, the fabulous G-Men. They can't tell. They haven't figured it out. They can't tell because it doesn't fit in with the narrative. Of course, the actual truth doesn't fit in with the narrative that he died. Now it's coming out. He didn't die by a Trump supporter hitting him in the head with a fire extinguisher. He died of a stroke the next day that was completely unrelated, is what it looks like. And the FBI certainly hasn't done anything.
And he
to
probably died because he was totally unfit to be a cop, was out of shape, and died because he encountered stress.
I don't know about that. I don't know, but maybe. It wasn't a Heather Heyer situation necessarily, but Ray of the FBI says extremists are less and less easy to pin down. Well, that's one truthful thing that they said. They're really hard to pin down when they don't exist, to actually identify those who are the frightening white racist terrorists, because they aren't out there. And because there aren't any, any white man who questions the system narrative, now that will do. That's why they attack us. That's why they attack us. But yes, it's hard to pin them down when they don't exist the way that they mention it.
You know, they'll have to Photoshop the bombs and the weapons and everything else that they're supposed to be carrying, because they don't carry them. They're just people that talk on to one another, keyboard commandos, call them whatever you want to, but they are not dangers for physical violence. That's all entirely on the left.
And now you have Congressional Committee, chaired by none other than the Representative Maxine Waters. They held a hearing a few days ago. Dollars Against Democracy, Domestic Terrorist Financing in the Aftermath of Insurrection.
We're just flooding. We're awash in money over here on the right.
And so who would testify at such a hearing? Of course, they invited none other than the scandal-plagued far-left smear factory, the Southern Poverty Law Center. And so in the SPLC's testimony.
They are washing money.
In the SPLC's testimony, they suggested concrete ways, according to PJ Media, that government and big tech can separate so-called hate groups from their online funding sources. Well, isn't it interesting that just right after this happened, we lost ours? Separating hate groups from their online funding sources will prevent their ideas from reaching an audience, and it will disrupt their network. So said the SPLC. The only time that hatred factors into this equation at all is with organizations like the SPLC and the ADL. That is where hatred is the primary motivator.
Hatred of dissenting voices.
And that's certainly where it lives. But again, it's no wonder why we once and for all lost our ability to process online contributions last month. But what is a hate group? Who are they really targeting here? Of course, anyone to the right of Comrade Stalin, that is what qualifies as a hate group. That's why we're under attack here at TPC. They hate Jesus Christ. They hate us. They hate our families. That's where the hatred truly factors in this equation.
A hate group is a group that basically,
they hate.
That's it. Anyone whose opinions or outlook is contrary to them, that is opposed to them, That is hatred. Opposition equals hatred in the eyes of the SPLC and the left generally.
Before this congressional hearing, it was recommended that tech companies commit to regular outside audits, work with other tech companies to prevent so-called hate groups. That's people who want to stand up and defend their families and their heritage and they don't dishonor their ancestors, from finding a new online payment processor after they've been blacklisted. And they call that funding terrorism. We're the terrorists, you see. I'm the leader of the Ku Klux Klan. I'm a terrorist. I'm all of this, according to our courts and according to people who testify at these ridiculous congressional hearings. But that's what they're doing. And they now are advising these payment processors to go and scour the websites of the companies that they do business with. Previously, TPC was one of them. And if there's anything that looks as though the SPLC would object to, well, then you're done. And it's a silly, unserious government. While they attack Christian families like ours, they support the critical race theory and ideology that directly inspired the deadly riots we saw all last year from Black Lives Matter and Antifa. And so we are fighting back. Our people are fighting back by writing checks. Hey, folks, we're playing in the majors on this one, and we always have. When TPC gets attacked, it's not by obscure bloggers or assorted loons on social media. When we get attacked, it's by Congress, and it's by major media and big tech and by the most prominent hate groups in the world, the ADL and the SPLC.
Now, you talk about people that have funding sources, SPLC and the ADL, I mean, they basically have a printing press for money.
Hundreds of millions of dollars, and that's no lie. But here we have their Congress inviting legitimate hate groups to testify on what they consider to be hate and how they can better deplatform.
And hatred, like we said, is merely opposition. If you oppose them, You are not just an opponent, you're a hater, a vile hater who needs to be silenced.
A lot of reflection going on, I think, up there in Congress, and so that's what's going on. So everything about it, just from the joke of having groups like that go in and testify as to what is and isn't hate, about not being able to tell anyone after, what is it now, 2 months, why that cop during the so-called insurrection was killed, the ridiculousness of boarding up Washington like it's under attack because of what happened on the 6th, and pretending, and it's just a big pretend. And I watch some of these hearings on CNN. I watch some of this. All these so-called experts and generals coming up and saying, yeah, we've got evidence, intelligence that the 3%ers, I mean, I don't know how, and there's a 0% chance that there's 50,000 3%ers in the country, much less 50,000 that were going to go and attack Washington on March the 4th.
Well, where do they come up with these numbers anyway? First it was the 1%ers, then the 3%ers. It's like, you know, the 6 million and all of these other numbers that they throw about, and they never, you know, verify or validate these numbers they use, but they gain a kind of mythic status in the eyes of the public. You know, if the ADL and the SPLC say it's 3%, it's got to be 3%.
Well, there you have it, and that's what you've got with your intelligence community. Pat Buchanan had a beautiful column, a truly brilliant column. It's really one of the best he's written in several months, I'll tell you, and we're going to have it posted to our website on Monday. It's Who Really Imperils the Republic, and he directly compares the so-called insurrectionists to Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and he makes mention of the Derek Chauvin trial, which begins on Monday. And to that, he said, "My guess, Minneapolis, not Capitol Hill, is where the action will be this spring, and it will not be Proud Boys keeping the cops busy, but folks who, if they voted at all, vote Democratic."
I tell you what's going to happen in the Minneapolis trial of Derek Chauvin. It's either going to be...
He walk?
Well, it's either going to be Rodney King and he walks, or it's going to be James Alton Fields and he's railroaded. Despite the evidence, you know, look, face it, the emperor has no clothes again. George Floyd died of a fentanyl overdose, period. End of sentence, okay? That's all there is. Derek Chauvin did not pump fentanyl into his veins
And you could say, well, maybe he wouldn't have died had he not gotten excited during the arrest, but maybe he wouldn't have been arrested had he not been breaking the law and not been a known criminal with a rap sheet a mile long.
Look, his whole life, look at the rap sheet he had. His whole life was exciting, okay?
All right, so, but the bottom line is, you know, it's interesting, though, with juries, juries get it right in more times than you think in cases like this. Now, I'm not giving any credit to the judicial system. Certainly not a bench trial or a trial that is governed by only a judge. But you know, who would have ever thought that George Zimmerman would have been acquitted, even though obviously he should have been, but who would have thought that they would have had the courage to do that? But they did, and then in the case with Michael Brown and letting the cop walk. There's been a lot of cases like that where the jury gets it right. Well, Even in the light of a lot of pressure.
Look, they have learned from their mistakes. They're not going to allow the jury system to work the way that it was intended to. They're going to load the dice just like they loaded the dice on the November election for president. They're no longer taking any chances. I guarantee you there's going to be some shenanigans in terms of the choosing of the jury if the left has its way. That's the way they operate now. You know, if you can't win honestly, well, a dishonest win beats a loss, in their opinion.
We'll certainly be keeping eyes on this trial, and I wonder how long a case like this will stretch. Is it going to be like OJ, where it's on, they don't even have court TV anymore? Is this going to be daytime TV viewing for months and months, or is it going to be something that wraps up in a couple of weeks? I mean, I wonder.
Well, if it goes like the election, what they'll do is while they're sitting back in the jury room deliberating, they're going to replace the jury with another handpicked jury of their own.
We'll see, but we'll keep you posted. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to go to the mailbag, and we're going to read some comments from you in response to our announcement last week. We're going to give you a big update, and then we're going to go to the land down under with Drew Fraser. Stay tuned.
The political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win. They lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. By a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The Foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Two weary travelers from Jerusalem, walking with a stranger down that dusty highway. Two weary travelers from Jerusalem, walking with a stranger down that dusty road. And they walked another hour to Emmaus town, and shared their supper till the sun went down. When he broke the bread, then the word spread around that Christ was on that gospel road. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John told about Jesus on that dusty highway. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John told about Jesus on that dusty road. How his pillows were the stones where they laid his head. How the hungry 5,000 on the hill were fed. How they sent him to the cross, but he came back instead to walk upon that gospel road.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to dedicate that to the TPC listening audience. It is a struggle. Life's a struggle. It's certainly a struggle in a dissident movement against the forces that we are that we have opposing us. But the journey is made lighter by those of us who help us shoulder the load. And so many of you have done that, ladies and gentlemen, just this week. So we announced, of course, last week that about a month ago, we lost our payment processing online. And the response has, Keith, been beyond overwhelming. Beyond overwhelming. As I said, and I've said it many times, for some reason your microphone's turned off, Keith, but as I have said, we have a relationship with our audience that I think exceeds that of any other organization and their helpers.
Well, there is a line in that song, Gospel Road, by Johnny Cash, where he says, they died in shipwrecks and in lions' dens. They died on crosses and the spears of men, but one fell, two more would step in and walk upon that gospel road. Well, that's what our supporters have done. They've doubled down.
So far, so good is the news. Let me update you on that. We don't want to sound the alarm and then not give you an update. I never thought that we would be immediately going off the air, but when you enter into uncharted waters and when half of your funding has come in online over the course of 16 years, you certainly don't know how it's going to go until it happens. I thought the audience would respond. What has happened so far this week, and we have to have it continue for the rest of the month, of course. And then, of course, we have to get on a new method of where we're doing this quarterly, sending in the checks and the money orders to keep us going. But what I have seen this week, my God, you people. Let's just get
You've answered the call.
I'll just give you just a few. I have a mailbag here a foot deep, but I'm going to pull from it just a few off the top. This comes from Alan down in Florida. Greetings to you and Mr. Alexander. I enclosed my first quarter contribution in hopes that it reaches you before Christmas. Yes, he sent that in the last week of February, Alan did. You're right. I mean, it did. Thank you, Alan. It did get here. The post office has been struggling. I'm glad that we all remain at large and that TPC continues to tell the truth and to defend the remnant of the Old South. And that comes from Alan in Florida. Alan is one of our quarterly contributors who traditionally has given by check, and he continues to do so. Our beloved maestro, the gentleman, the talent who always plays the piano at our conferences and at our meetings, he gave just a few days ago the second largest single contribution we've ever received in the history of the show. Keith in Canada, who for 15 years has donated on the first of every month with a credit card.
Like clockwork.
With a credit card, sent in his first money order this week. I want to thank Keith up in Canada. We have people like Jimmy in Washington State who just keep on plugging. Bill in Chino, California, keep on plugging. He sends in support every week via check, if you can believe it. John in Texas, talk to John on the phone. He's always there with us. Y'all are all family to us. We have new donors who have stepped up in the last week, like Steve in South Carolina, who sent me a beautiful letter. He was with us at Dixie Republic when we did that remote broadcast there. Back in November. William in Florida, new donor on the line. Buddy in Arkansas, who is our single biggest contributor, accumulatively speaking, is with us. Rich in Nashville and his lovely wife, Janice. Rich is always sending in quarterly support. He upped his quarterly support, okay, in light of what's going on. Ken in New York. Ken's a guy who sends in contributions online. He sent in his first check this week. Lane in Texas was one of our recurring donors who donated on a recurring payment schedule every month. He sent in a very, very, very generous check for the first time. And even our own team, Jack Ryan, sent in money this week. He said he was going to match some contributions, and he stepped up, and he did it. And even our guests, people like Gene Andrews, Gene sent in a contribution. When you have not only your listeners, ladies and gentlemen, but people on your staff, people who serve as your guests, sitting in support, you know you have built something the likes of which very few organizations can boast. And I do boast about it because it is such a blessing to me. I am so proud of it. Maybe it's not boasted, maybe the right word. I am so proud of it. I am so proud to be a part of this team. Gene wrote, James, hang in there. You know you're right if the elites are trying to shut you down. Rush Limbaugh was a Lincoln-worshipping pseudo-conservative. He was jealous of your program because you didn't suck up to sponsors. And you told the truth, something he never did. Truth, hate speech in the Soviet Republican, the Republic of America today. That's Gene Andrews. That's our friend. And Chris in South Carolina. Chris, my goodness, my friend, what you've done for us this week. And there's so many more we'll get to. But Keith, a quick word, and we're going to keep going through. We're going to chew up this mailbag as best we can.
We'd be remiss if we did not mention that our friend Kevin from the Dakotas blew through and We spent a wonderful day with him and a wonderful evening. It was great. See, I'm floored at the quality of the people that we've attracted as our listenership and as our supporters in this show. These people are the salt of the earth, and they are intelligent, and they are loyal. I mean, the loyalty that this show has engendered in the hearts of and minds of so many people is it's truly humbling that our people basically that they appreciate what we do even more than we appreciate it ourselves, and the fact that they have done everything that they have done to try to answer the call in this time of need shows you exactly
thank you,
what
Keith.
You have.
Keith, you are so right. And they appreciate us. We know it because they tell us. They don't appreciate us half as much as we appreciate them. And listen, I'm not diminishing the appreciation they show us, but I'm telling you how much I love you, ladies and gentlemen. Micah out in Maryland saw the news about the online payments being shut down by our good friends at the ADL and the SBLC. Here's twice my usual quarterly donation. Take care, and we're going to win. Well, Micah, thanks to people like you, we certainly will. Bill and his wife outside of Knoxville, I thought you would enjoy this message from Thomas Jefferson. It's very fitting and true, and they sent in a very generous contribution, Bill. And Thomas Jefferson, the quote he sent me is, and yes, I did appreciate it, my friend, if we are to guard against ignorance and remain free, it is the responsibility of every American to be informed. And I think, Keith, that is our charge, our God-given and God-assigned duty here at TBC each and
we're
every
doing the
week.
Job that the American media should be doing but won't do. This is truly the job that the traditional media they used to talk about immigrants doing jobs that Americans won't do. Well, one of the jobs that the traditional American media won't do is report honestly and tell the truth.
I've got so many. Keith, just tell them what I'm holding in my hand. You can't. I wish we were
little,
on television.
These are little notepads that people have written on. And let me tell you.
How many do we have here? We have a box full.
We have a box full of people that, you know, all we have to do is sound the trumpet. And, I mean, the Saints come marching
in. It's been a big week. It has been a big week in response. We have answered the call and served a volley in return, but it does need to continue because, listen, you can have a big week in response to an alarm going off and then get complacent, and we're not going to have that recurring money coming in from online, that recurring funding that we need to keep this program on the air. But I will tell you this, if this week is any indication, we're going to be just fine. We'll be here for 16 more years if you keep this up, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, SPLC and ADL. You know, throw us in that briar patch again, because what you're doing is we're about doubling, you know.
This is the, well, it's been 1 week, so let's not get too excited. Listen, we tell our audience the truth. We don't, I hate fundraising. We don't do it perpetually. We don't do it incessantly. We do it every quarter. But listen, I got to tell you when we need it, and I got to tell you when, hey, you know, listen, folks, we're okay. Right now, it's still too early to tell, but this has been a big week. And this letter right here, though, from Hank down in Florida, not only did he send in a contribution, Hank has never sent in a check before, but he has never missed a quarter. He has always donated online every quarter for as many years as I can remember. And here's Hank. Not only does he send in a check for the first time, going the extra effort. I know it's a little bit more effort if you haven't been used to doing it, but he sends in a check with a note about his impending marriage and a note about his family and things that are going on. Hank and his dear, dear, dear wife were at our 10-year anniversary, and she went on to be with the Lord sometime after that. And Hank is getting remarried, but Hank and his, listen, his family is our family, and these are people we've gotten to know and love, and his son is having a grandson, and he's going to be a grandpa again. He's getting married, getting remarried, and this is just, listen, it's wonderful to be able to share in the lives of people that are better than you, and our audience is better than us, Keith, and it is an honor. Honor to be able to serve them, to be able to serve them and to have them look at our offerings, at our work, and say, you know what, that's something worthy of our support.
Well,
let me just say this.
God bless the U.S. Postal Service. You know, because they're a government agency, they cannot discriminate the way that
companies. They may not come when we want them, but it'll get there right on time.
Eventually they'll come through, and let me tell you, the ADL and the SPLC couldn't, if we were paying them $1 million for a ad campaign, the reaction to what they've done could not have been.
Well, let's not get overzealous. We haven't had $1 million.
But I'm just telling you that the more they double down, the more our people triple down.
Well, that's because we've built something real. We've built something based on another love and mutual respect and kinship that those people can never understand and that they'll never know. We love you, ladies and gentlemen. That's how the first week is going. Let's see how this week goes and the rest of the month, and we'll let you know. But the world tour, our march around the world continues. We're going to Australia next.